Unfortunately, this word dulao is obscured because we always find it rendered servant. It means slave. And he says, I've been slaving for you all these years, and you never threw a party for me, Dad. That's the Pharisee. That's the overworked, overburdened, self-serving churchman. That's the church member talking who conceives of himself as having all the burden of building the kingdom. And here comes this party-giving Jesus who seems to make goodness superfluous. Why is it that we so often miss the point of this story? Perhaps it is because we are accustomed to preach on the first half. But that's like hearing the first part of a joke and not waiting for the punchline. Jesus told the first part in order to get at the second part where the point of the whole thing lies. Says Jesus to us, God is anxious to give us the kingdom. He is anxious to give us a share in his joy over the success of his kingdom outreach into the life of some poor, dismayed, unoriented soul. But too often we are absorbed in the preservation of our own status. And we are convinced that there are only certain grooves through which grace can be channeled and only certain types of people to be admitted, namely those who can grasp the cultural levels and understand the devices we employ to communicate with one another. Hence, we are very suspicious of the conversions affected by the preaching of a non-union man like Billy Graham. And we find it hard to believe that the Holy Spirit could actually breathe a bit of fresh air into the papacy. But God does not give up his parties. The kingdom of heaven is like a wedding. The kingdom of heaven is like a big dinner party. So it goes. And RSVP is on the invitation. And even if none of the original guests who were invited show up, God is still determined to throw a party. And he goes out into the highways and byways, and the kingdom of heaven is given to a nation, notice, given to a nation, that will bring forth the fruits thereof. We cannot build the kingdom, but we can cut ourselves out of a slice of the joy of seeing God doing it in those with whom we ought to share it. God is never the loser. He is right on schedule. He is a determined seeker. He never gives up. And if he does not find through me, he will find through another. No one will be lost because the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod missed out on missionary opportunities. But you and I will be losing out on the joy unless we share more earnestly the searching mood and ecstatic joy of the God who wills that not one sinner perishes. We meet so many people in the onrush of our business that it is becoming increasingly difficult to establish relationships with some semblance of continuity. The rapid turnover in our larger congregations does not permit development of an homogenized group. And the influx of suburbanites into a church located in development projects may be tragically deceptive to a pastor who feels himself flattered by phenomenal statistical growth. Pastors tell me that as they stand at the narthex of a suburban church after the service, an astounding number of people inquire how they can join the church. I believe it because I was vacancy pastor for a while, and I referred countless visitors who were asking that very question to the elders standing by. The temptation is strong, I say, to consider this mission work and to forget the importance of the individualized concern. We are to mirror the concern of God for the sinner. In contrast to the suburbanite who seeks out the church for some security that seems to offer, there are many others who consider the church quite irrelevant. They are like the woman who was dying of cancer, but without Christ in our city hospital. She had lived for some time in a little room about the size of a large closet, just a block away from one of the large churches. The Christian friend asked her why she hadn't gone to that church. Certainly there was someone there who would have taken an interest in her so that she wouldn't have had to bear all her troubles alone. She sat up stiffly in her bed and said, you know the church isn't for the likes of me. The church is for the good people, and I'm bad. We may complain all we want about the world justifying its own sin by accusing the church of hypocrisy. And we love to complain about the people on the outside saying the church is filled with hypocrites and we excuse ourselves, but let us not weasel out of it by clever amateur psychologizing, and let us face it. The image is there. And we must admit that as church, we are often poor mirrors of the concern of God. We defend ourselves and say, how often isn't the helping hand rejected, and how often isn't the door slammed in the face? But we can't tread water forever. The question is, why was Jesus so welcome to publicans and sinners? With the most rigorous ethic the world has ever seen, and why was the early church so successful with the ordinary citizen and the slave? It was because they registered a concern. And this concern shines through the Epistle of Peter when he speaks of how wives might win their unbelieving husbands, not by reciting them Bible passages, not by nagging them to come to church, not by showing a hurt countenance because they are not participating, but by winsome behavior, by mirroring the kind of relationship which will make the unbeliever see the emptiness, the frustration, the futility of its own existence as he sees that his wife is not like the wives his friends at the office complain about as they seek solace in outside company. Such a woman really loves her husband. She is interested in him, and not first of all in the satisfaction it will give her or her church to win him to the denominational role. Think of the misery and the agony that some young girl goes through who has shared her virtue and her love too carelessly. One of our pastors has the good fortune of having in his congregation a middle-aged woman who told him a few years ago, "My children are grown up. My husband and I live here alone, and we have plenty of room. If you hear of any girl that needs a home for a while, you let us know." Naturally, that pastor is popular with the social worker. But the point here is that a member of Christ's church is carrying on a ministry of mirrored concern. The girls who go through that folks' home will know without being told that in that home religion runs deep. And having found the warmth of the family of God, which is not judgmental but forgiving in its warm and unselfish embrace, they will go back into the world prepared to understand such words as the family of God, the love of God, the concern of God, the forgiveness of God. They will understand it because they've seen it firsthand. They have had a commentary, a living letter. After all, why should a person be interested in going to heaven if he doesn't know anybody there? If all his friends and acquaintances are going to the other place because they're bad, and the preacher says all such people are going to hell anyway, the prospects of heaven are pretty lonely. And if you think that this is unrealistic, then go back with me to that same hospital room. A local man of God went to see this dying woman and tried to interest her in thinking about heaven, but she showed little enthusiasm. She knew she was going to die, but still heaven didn't interest her too much. Then he called in somebody else to try, and after seeing her a few times, her visitor said to her, "Martha, when you get to heaven, look up my father." Then Martha's eyes brightened, and she said, "As soon as I check in with the Lord Jesus, I'll do just that." What had happened here? God had become meaningful to this person in terms of a fatherly concern. She saw that concern mirrored in a person who did not come just once or twice, but steadily, day after day. And when she had developed a relationship with another person and found out that this person whom she knew was related to another person who was already at the party, then she was ready to go to the party too. This was God's way of completing the joy of her conversion. For now Martha would know someone when she came into the presence of a God who had been so strange to her. This experience is merely an inverted commentary on the Johannine question, how can one love God whom he has not seen if he does not love his brother whom he has seen? Recently, a young Christian gentleman was invited by the chaplain of one of our state institutions to visit a certain inmate. He established a cordial relation with the inmate, who does not yet know that his visitor is a Christian. He is already amazed that the man has come back several times, for usually people show an initial curiosity and then drop out of the picture because the novelty is rubbed off. But it will not be long until they begin to talk about one another's families and their daily life patterns. Then it will come out that the visitor is a Christian, and the inmate will know that there is nothing phony in what this Christian says. He will be amazed at only one thing. What is this Christianity which can produce such a faithful concern where there is absolutely no personal benefit involved? We pastors, I say we because I have served in various parishes, We pastors like to maintain a certain amount of contact with our parishioners, especially in a counseling relationship. But we cannot possibly do what we would wish to do for all who require it. It's necessary, therefore, in addition to the individualizing of our members' ministries to one another and to those outside the fold, to encourage the use of professional assistance. Not only will the individual receive expert help, which we are not always qualified to give, but he will be relieving us for assistance to more people in those areas where we are especially competent. At the same time, as pastors, we can work together with the professional in continuing a sustained interest as we see the individual through to a successful solution of his problem. It is only when we meddle with the professional's program of cure that we become obnoxious. Otherwise, we will welcome our continued and sustained interest in the person. The temptation to handle all the tasks ourselves is very strong, and we feel that the presence of another person in the case might be an intrusion on our pastoral relationship. This can be a selfish point of view. And here again, it is important to see the value of the individualized ministry of our laymen. A pastor of another denomination recently was approached by one of our service agencies on a problem. The matter was rather urgent. It involved going to a town about 20 miles distant. Now, do you know what answer they received? The pastor said he had an old man in his congregation who was dying. He might have 2 days or a week left, and he turned down the request. Evidently, he did not know or realize what the parable of the lost sheep meant. It means literally that you leave the 99 in the wilderness and go out after the lost. But what about the poor man who was dying? He had been a member in the church, and I hope he knew what the gospel was all about. But what the pastor perhaps should have done was say to that old dying man, "I have some good news for you. I've been asked to go out of town to help introduce somebody to the love of the Lord. You may leave before I come back, but I want you to join the angels in a song of celebration if we can show God's love to that person. You have some very good friends here, and they will continue to bring you the consolations of the gospel. It will do their souls good. Besides, he's only going to be gone a couple hours." The words of Jesus are indeed very real. For there was a man who asked Jesus once for permission to go back home to bury his father. But Jesus said it loud and clear, "Let the dead bury their dead, but you go and preach the kingdom of God." Think of the opportunities we waste to mirror the kingdom of the Lord. Think of the opportunities missed on the campus because we fail to make of each arrival on that campus who calls himself Christian a personal mirror of the kingdom. Not just to bring another student to the chapel or to the lounge, but to involve himself in a concerned relationship with another person. Why do you find so many homely girls and bedraggled young men in left-wing organizations? Because the church has not been mirroring the kingdom. It's because they have found consolation and companionship with one another, which they could not find elsewhere, because others would not put up with their peculiar ideas, which probably were sprouted by earlier inability to establish pleasant relationships. It is too easy for Christians to become a snob group, interested only in their welfare and in their own fellowship. But what joy in heaven it is when new faces appear on the campus and the Christians in the group begin to take a personal interest in the new arrivals, not primarily as possible candidates for the chapel hour, but simply as people with whom they would like to share a Christian concern. The remarkable character of Jesus' concern for his disciples is noted by John when he writes, "He
loved his own and loved them to the end, all the way. It was a consistent love and therefore genuine. He himself emphasized it. He was not like the hireling shepherd, a 9-to-5 man. He was the true shepherd who loved the sheep. Jesus never volunteered for the job of saving the world. God gives the kingdom, God gives Jesus, and Jesus goes forth to do the will of the Lord. His Father sends him," he says on numerous occasions. "The Father selected him for that task. And in God's relationship with Jesus is a lesson for the church which has too often and to its sorrow relied on volunteer help. What happens then is this. The individual serves as long as it suits him. And when it is not convenient, then help is no longer forthcoming. Or the volunteers select their project. They have an organization, but an organization means nothing unless it is organizing something. Therefore, the program chairman must dream up projects. The ladies' aide may decide to visit the old folks' home. They take some cake and cookies and visit a while. And that is the ladies' good deed for that month. And everyone goes home feeling that they have satisfied the preacher's requirement to do some charity. Nothing of the kind has happened. They have satisfied an urge, a curiosity, perhaps to find out where some of their money is going, or to quiet a guilty feeling about their own selfish prosperity. But there is nothing of charity. But the trip need not be in vain, not if the pastor will follow this up and say to Mrs. Blower, "Why don't you make it a point to write regularly to Mrs. Blumenkamper at least once a week and plan to visit her regularly? Get just 5 or 10 women to show a consistent concern for someone else in a situation like that, providing that they are not neglecting their own home responsibilities. But in this day of the fast-moving automobile and with all the conveniences that we have, people have more time for one another. They may have to drop some of their bridge parties. And perhaps you will have to say to Mrs. Browngrow, get out of the beauty parlor and stop frittering so much of your life away. Get busy investing it more usefully. Some people have to be told bluntly and directly that they are going to hell, that they are not in the kingdom, not at the present rate that they're going. A pastor was called just a few days ago with the following request. A young man who has had a checkered youth is determined to make a contribution to society now, but he needs a room to live near his place of work. Do you have someone in your congregation who would help him find a place by checking the want ad? A simple request, nothing complicated, but this man made a project out of it. He said he was just leaving for his vacation the next day, and this was the kind of thing he couldn't really entrust to a lay member, but he was sorry he couldn't handle it right now. All very polite. But it sounded suspiciously like the man who also very politely said, "I've bought 5 yoke of oxen and I must now go out to prove them. Please have me excused." What this man should have done long before he got a call like that was draw up a list of members in his congregation for various types of ministries, for the wayward girl, for the lonely arrival in town, for the friendless one, for the boy who needs to develop a fresh father image, for the crippled widow whose family has left the city, for the chronic invalid at the various hospitals. Then he should have called on the members he selected, with or without his appointed board. And he should have said, "Mr. Brown, you have a knack with handling boys. I want to be able to count on you when I get a problem case. Mrs. Schultz, you have a gift of gab. I've got a lonely lady down the street. She isn't a member of our church, but she would just love to have some visitors. I want you to take her under your wing. It may mean you have to drop some of your other activities, but I want you to take care of her. Mr. Schwartz, I want you to be general troubleshooter. You have a knack for getting difficult jobs done. I don't care whether you do the job yourself, but I must be able to count on you at 5 minutes' notice. Maybe you can get a line on 2 or 3 others to stand by." If that pastor had been really concerned about seeking out souls, he would have been able to call up Mr. Schwartz and say, "Will you take care of this young man? I don't want you to give him anything. Just page through the want ads with him. He's sort of green at this kind of thing, just came from the Ozarks. Help him find a room around here." And that would be that, because Pastor X would know that he could count on Schwartz, who was proud to belong to the elite corps. Our members are missing opportunities right and left simply because we haven't taught them to think in terms of genuine concern as a mirror of the kingdom. Just last Sunday, I was preaching at a local congregation, and I suggested to the parents that when they hear of a bad teenager in their neighborhood, their first instinct should not be to say to their own teenagers, I don't want you to associate with that boy or that girl. That's the first-class way to make Pharisees out of him. On the contrary, tell your own child or children to invite that person over to the home. Take him out on a picnic with the family. Let the boy see how another boy can live in a Christian family and have a great deal of fun. Let him develop a different father image, yet without infringing on the parental rights on the other side. This will be a great opportunity for your own child growing into adulthood, I said, and thus help him prepare for a life of genuine concern. And one of the members said to me after the service, that was an eye-opener. Not long ago, a Christian had occasion to visit a woman member of the Black Muslims who was in trouble. Everything went quite well, but the Black Muslim thought to herself, this is one of those project gals, one of these self-serving characters. She was amazed when the woman came back a week later and looked her up personally. She was dumbfounded when she received another visit and even a piece of mail. Then she asked why the visitor bothered to see her. And the visitor said she was a friend of Jesus and all she wanted to do was show her a Christian concern. But you must have an angle. Everybody's got an angle. No Christian ever done anything for me. Well, said a visitor, I'm a Christian and I'm doing something for you. I'm visiting you. Well, to make a long story short, this Black Muslim was very excited one Sunday evening about 6 months later when the visitor returned and said to her, the Black Muslim did, watch carefully tonight in the chapel. And to her own astonishment, the visitor saw the Black Muslim in a choir robe leading the choir in Precious Savior, Take My Hand. And after the service, she came to her visitor and just broke down and bawled. She was so happy to have returned to the fold. Unfortunately, too often we appear as Lady Bountiful, and our motives are suspect before we open the door. Social workers can spot us a mile off when we come with that attitude. Poor people get baskets at Christmas, but Christian employers do not make it a point to find some specific people. They say, is there somebody in the congregation who will be able to do this? They do not make it a point to find specific people to whom they can give jobs during the rest of the year so that some of those people won't need Christmas baskets. Children's friend societies are bombarded with clothes at certain times of the year. But they have on their list problem children who could use a genuine, consistent concern of a well-balanced home. They could use many more homes to temporarily take care of babies being processed for adoption. But they always run into this story. I might get attached to the child, and it will be so hard to give it up. Which being interpreted simply means, don't bother me. Or some silly excuse like this, well, we're going on a vacation just then, or my aunt is coming to visit us. At any rate, if such are the real emotional attitudes, then the pastor has some counseling to do to show what Christianity really means, namely to display a genuine, unselfish concern in the welfare of another fellow human being. Your elder may be very generous with your money, with his money. that has happened too. But the question is, can you call him on the phone and say to him, one of the judges just called and asked whether I could find a job for one of his boys. Would you handle it for me? If you hear a response something like this, well, there isn't anything open right now, but I'll see what I can do about it, then you know you have some unfinished business to take care of. Remember the persistence of God. We give up too easily. I know of three people in just the last month who had persistent Christians help get them jobs. But do you know how many calls each one of those Christians had to make, calls on employers, 70 tries for each of them. Yes, in each case, more than 70 employees were called on. The motto, however, of these Christians is, we never give up. To sum up, the two most formidable obstacles to a genuine, persistent concern which will mirror the kingdom are these. First of all, the busyness of women. A lady's aide a few weeks ago spent 15 minutes hearing a report that 35 jump ropes and 35 pieces of bubble gum had been solemnly collected for a children's home. Another group was proudly hearing a report on the delivery of a shipment of diapers to a Far Eastern mission. The most smiles of satisfaction, however, were registered over the fact that some of the devoted women had embroidered them with daisies. And now, what self-respecting baby, I ask you, wants a daisy pricking its bottom? We men, however, have a cardinal sin. It is avoidance or withdrawal. As soon as a task outside of our normal behavior patterns develops, we become very officious. And we agree that the job ought to be done. We'll put a study committee on it. We commend the person for giving it some thought, which is another way of saying, I promise you, I'll soon be forgetting about it. Why? Simply because we are too conceited, usually, to accept direction. This is why men are less effective instruments for social welfare. But once get the idea through to ourselves and to others, that other Christians and other experts in other areas can tell us something, then the way to useful service is open. And actually, we are doing ourselves and others a favor when we and others are involved in such mirroring of the kingdom, for we are practicing practical absolution. How did Peter learn what forgiveness was? He received no abstract essay. But Jesus pronounced a practical affirmation. He said, Peter, be my partner. That was all there was to it, and Peter was no doubt flabbergasted. Imagine to be partners with this one whom he had just asked to leave. That was confession with a deluxe absolution. It is time we stopped making apologies for Christian service. Christian service, Christian commitment, Christian availability is an opportunity to hear the words of absolution, to be taken into the partnership of sharing the good word in whatever capacity. That is a chance to hear the word of the Lord, I count you as my partner. One of the most remarkable letters in the New Testament is the covering letter Paul sent to the Philippians in behalf of Epaphroditus. Now just remember, this is a busy apostle, and he has a great deal on his mind, but he has time to think about Epaphroditus and his problem. And why was he concerned about him? Because Epaphroditus had been sent by the Philippians to take care of Paul for a while. The trouble is, Epaphroditus had a streak of misfortune. He got sick while in Rome. As a result, he was unable to be of much help to the apostle, perhaps more trouble even than he was worth. And he knew it. And he was worried about what the folks back home would say. That is, for getting sick. And so Paul writes them and tells them, don't be too hard on Epaphroditus for getting sick. He's a valuable man. That was absolution. That was a recognition of his partnership which could not be interrupted by a temporary disability. For the intent was good, and that was what cheered Paul's heart, for it was a mirroring of the kingdom. All right. Very good.